You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Okay, guys, I'm going to try my headphones again and see if it works.
Okay.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves like honey butter.
I'm going to chop that one.
You're sweet like butter.
Oh, my God. Getting all the clumps.
All the clumps. I got some clumps.
I got to step over my dogs to go get some coffee.
All right. I think it's time for Suzanne to do a little Janice.
Janice, oh my God.
Yeah. Chandler Bing.
Janice. It's coming. What was it's coming. You're calling to me like a foghorn. Janice. Janice.
Wow.
But what's really funny is that that actress actually has a very nice voice and a very low register. She sounds nothing like that.
It's definitely a character.
Yes.
That's a great one. So, Rose, you can try. I think you need to come back off the headphones.
Yeah, we don't hear anything yet.
Bueller? Bueller?
Bueller? Okay. Son of a bitch. Anyway.
Nope, didn't work. Right.
No, apparently not. I kept saying hello. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Oh, no. Can't hear anything. Well, now I
All right.
All right. Let's see. Recording. Yes, I am. Okay. Sounds like everybody's ready, so we are going to jump right in. I got too much crap open. Here, hold on a second. All right. Here we go. We're good.
This is 80-something podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the thief?
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Go Ghostbusters! Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I.
Joe! Be it to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey, this is Banzai Retro Club. I am Dave. Online, I've got Scott.
Hey.
Suzanne.
Hi there.
And returning co-host, Rose.
Hey, y'all.
So great to hear you again, Rose. Thank you for being with us as we tackle our 1989 year-end wrap-up. For those that didn't listen to the 1979 episode, what we're doing is we're... As part of our year-end wrap-up episodes, what we're doing is we go through 79, 89, and 99, which correlates to the end of the year for 2019 for us. And so by now, you've already listened to the 1979 episode. We're going to continue the same format we did with that one. This time, tackling 1989, we've got a movie that lined up that we're going to talk about. We have a TV show. We have an album. That was pretty significant for 1989, and we'll throw in some headlines. And also, we really geeked out last time we were on with the 79 episode, where we were scrolling through the Sears Wish Book, And I think maybe that was a little bit of fun because we got to see like an actress that I didn't expect to see her in there, but apparently it was a big deal for her to be in there. So I don't think there's anything like that for 1989, but I think it's going to be fun to revisit some of the fashion stuff that was going on and even the toys. So you'll hear us kind of scrolling through stuff and probably say like page blah, blah, blah. So as a listener, what we're going to do is we'll post the link to the Sears Wish Book with the episode, and then you can follow along with us, and then when we denote a certain page, you'll know what we're talking about. Sounds fair?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Hey.
What? Hey. Hello?
No.
No?
Yay, let's go.
Yeah. Okay.
Ready to go.
All right. 1989, big year for me personally. I graduated high school, joined the Navy. I had my first sexual experience. Oh, whoops, sorry, that was too much information.
Wow. Didn't see that one coming.
TMI?
No.
Whoa.
Judgment.
Whoa.
That's okay. What she said.
I gotta stop talking about ballet before the show. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm telling you, exactly. Yeah, where my mind's at. Hell. So very big year for me, 1989. I guess if you want to summarize what was going on in you know, for you personally, Rose, what was 1989 like for you?
A frickin' disaster.
Frickin' disaster.
Oh, no.
Here, I laid out a great year, and you're like, that's a disaster. So, okay.
What happened was I'm going into my third year of being a single parent and failing miserably. Had quite a few setbacks, one of them being eviction. My kids and I got evicted from our already cheap rented abode, and so we spent part of the summer in a local shelter, which was a blessing in disguise, pretty much, because it taught me a valuable lesson. And we won't get into that at the moment. But, you know, I think it would be pretty obvious, but it really isn't, you know. Sometimes you just have to figure these things out for yourself. So one of the things that I figured out was there is nobody else, you know, for these kids. It's just me. And there was a turning point to where I had to make a decision about how I was going to move forward after that experience. And so we kind of drove around. They give you like 2 weeks to find a place. And then if you don't find a place, they give you an extension. So we opted for the extension because we really couldn't find anything that was feasible. So we ended up finding a fairly nice sized house in a really bad neighborhood. It was okay. The neighborhood itself was great. The area of the neighborhood, and it's called Hilltop in Tacoma. So back then it was quite the force to be reckoned with. You know, you have a story you're telling somebody that you grew up on Hilltop. People went, oh, you know, and they whispered that, you know, because, you know, it was quite the experience. It pretty much was what it was. Found a nice lady that rented us the place. Not too much money from what I was paying before. And the kids, you know, loved the house. It was our house. It was our first house together. You know, not that the other houses weren't, but it wasn't something that was, you know, set up and projected. Okay, so you're going to go from this place to this place. You know, because transitioning out of the military is kind of a bitch. And it takes a while, you know, to get adjusted. And then having all the other stuff happen before that. So our first Christmas in that house was very interesting. We may not have had a whole lot of things, but we had each other. And as hokey as that sounds, that's all that mattered. the next year, the next Christmas was very interesting indeed. That was the year that we had the large Christmas tree that was too big for our house, and we leaned it up against the corner. I know you guys remember me telling that story.
I totally remember that story, yes.
And how we only decorated one side of it. Mm-hmm. Because it wouldn't fit in the tree stand. But yeah, I mean, so 1989 was a good and a bad year, you know, and I love the fact that it ended on a high note, because sometimes you just need, sometimes you just need a swift kick in the butt to remind you that you're not always in charge. And, you know, if you're going to play the game of life, you got to know the rules. So, sorry. You asked.
No, that's great. I think that, you know, there's definitely periods that I could elaborate on, like even recently, that, you know, there was like that transitional period where there was some tough life lessons that I had to deal with. So I get it. I completely get where you're coming from. And it just sounds like, you know, what a contrast to my 1989. I'm glad that you weathered the storm and, you know, it worked out for you. So Suzanne, 1989, what were you up to?
1989. I think the year before I decided to leave New York City, I had like in late 80s, like 86, 87, maybe the beginning of 88, I was in an apartment in Queens with my best friend from high school, and I was absolutely miserable. But it took a while, and I was working in Manhattan. It took a while for it to dawn on me that if I was miserable, that meant I had to change something and leave. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I kind of didn't want to give up. This was, you know, my first foray out of college. I kind of didn't want to give up on what I thought was, you know, going to be this great life in the big city, but I hated it. It was making me cry every day. So by the time I got to like 88 or 1989, I left, and I finally, you know, said that this, forget about this. And I went back to Long Island, and I got a job on the island for a while, for maybe a year or two, working with like a small, like second run film company, because that's where my last job, my original job, was at Columbia Pictures. But then it was once again kind of one of those years where I was like kind of floating, like I didn't really have enough experience to get a decent job in my field. So I was kind of doing marketing and things that were kind of really peripheral to what I really wanted to do, which was something more relative to writing. And then I had mentioned that before too long, maybe around when we got into, I can't remember if it was 89 or 90, but that was when my boyfriend and I decided we were going to pick up and we were going to go move to Florida. So, and I think that marked the difference between me being like a floating post-adolescent and becoming an actual grown-up, you know, nice. where I was going to like take a path and get a job and stop, you know, just, you know, thinking that the world was there to, you know, to party and dance, and you know, I had to get a little bit more serious and think about my future. So,
nice. So you adulted at that point?
Yeah, well, I was maybe like on a precipice there, where I knew I had to, and I was holding back. You know, I didn't really want to take those last steps, but eventually I did, because I was just, you know, banging my head against the wall and making myself a little miserable, trying to like live between those two worlds. So. And things turned around after that. You know, it took a little while, but things turned around.
Very cool.
Good for me.
All right, so Scott.
Another big year of change for one of us. I moved from California to Chicago that year, and that was a big deal. Picking up everything I had, put it in the back of my truck, and just driving.
So, wow.
So yeah, it was good, but you know, ever since I've been in Chicago, it's been a great thing, you know. So it was a big year for change. I just decided to take that leap. I told a little bit of this story in our 1989 New Wave episode, which should be out by now, or will be out by the time you guys hear this one.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll hear some more of that story in that episode also. So
yeah, we touched on this kind of thing. It seemed like we were all in a transitional mode, you know, getting to that point where you had to really pick where you wanted to live, who you wanted to be with, and what was going to become of you the rest of your life.
You know, and actually, maybe that is a fantastic segue. Rather than going into like TV and movies first, like I normally do, but maybe we talk about the album, aptly titled "The End of the Innocence."
Oh wow!
Yeah. Oh,
is
it's
that
the end of your innocence, wasn't it?
Ouch! Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but that's the fun part of the end of innocence. Yes.
Why wasn't I doing this before? No, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean to. But no.
Too late.
Yeah. Yeah. Edit that out. Go ahead. All right. But no. But no. End of the Innocence. Don Henley. This is a big album for him. It feels like for us, for each of us, we were all going through our own significant changes. And it almost feels like, was it the end of the innocence? Like, I mean, myself, you know, I was graduating high school. I was going into the Navy. It sounds like, Suzanne, you were graduating into adulthood with kind of some life choices. Actually, all of us were going through some significant life choices. But were we graduating from, you know, the end of innocence, which could have been the 1980s at this point? Because, I mean, the decade was ending, right? So, you know, does it have something to, I mean, could we have, like, the trifecta here? We had the end of the decade, we have this album, and we have these all personal journeys that we're going through. Are there any of the songs that are on this album that you connected with because of what you were going through personally?
Place where we can go, still untouched by men. So watch the clouds roll back, the tall grass waves in the wind. And you can lay your head back on the ground, let your hair fall all around you. Offer up your best defense. This is the swords for this titled man, the elected king. Armchair warriors often fail. We've been poisoned by these fairy tales. Lawyers clean up all details since daddy had to lie.
Scott, I know you're our resident, you know, music person. You know, did this album do anything for you?
Actually, it did not.
Okay.
I don't get me wrong. I love Don Henley. I love when he was with the Eagles. I love a lot of Eagles stuff. But this album really wasn't on my radar at the time because I was just really into a lot of the hair metal bands and stuff like that. So this was a little bit off my usual scope.
Okay.
So I know, you know, all the singles that were released off of, at least the ones that are highlighted on Wikipedia, End of the Innocence, of course, The Last Worthless Evening, New York Minute, and Heart of the Manor. I know them all. I don't know anything else. Oh, If Dirt Were Dollars, I do remember that one too. But overall, it wasn't anything that connected with me at the time. So,
is there anything that has, like, these songs come up, like, in some sort of current setting?
No.
Okay.
I haven't heard many of them in a long time, unless it's by chance.
Okay.
That it might be on somebody else's radio.
Yeah, I know. New York Minute. That seems to be like a very dramatic song to put like on the back of a, you know, like a drama TV show. What I can think of recently is I like to rewatch old episodes of The West Wing, and I could have sworn there was an episode that, you know, there was that song that was kind of playing in the background, just kind of hanging out there. And it's very powerful, you know, to just kind of put in the background. So I was like, oh, God, just that's a beautiful song. But, you know, to a lot of what you were saying, though, there was those songs, you know, that were, you know, made all the airplay. You know, I know all of them, but the other songs I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Rose, were you into Don Henley?
I was. This album, I didn't own it, but I knew of, like Scott, I knew of the singles that came out. I'm thinking probably, you know, The Heart of the Matter would have been a really good song for what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a love-hate situation. I just had to decide what I needed to do with all those emotions I was experiencing, you know, among other things. So it was a very poignant yet very truthful song. He doesn't mince words, that's for sure.
No, not at all. I'm just wondering, is there ever a, like a song that is kind of happening in the background as something that you get related to a life event, and then by proxy it becomes part of that life event? Suzanne, does that make sense?
It does, as far as whether one of these songs played that role for me. I don't know that they did. He was a little kind of countrified for me, and I think I might have related a little bit more to The Boys of Summer, right, which he did, I think, several years before.
Yeah.
And it, you know, heard that a lot more and saw it on MTV and that kind of thing. But what I remember from hearing these songs is that they were all kind of sad. They were, if I think back to that, that job that I had with the film distributor, we were a real small office and we were kind of close. And, the guy who ran the office, who I'm still friends with now on Facebook, was, kind of a bit of a comedian. I remember him talking about this album and kind of saying, like, somebody give him some medication or say, you know, like, he's really the poor guy, you know, this last worthless evening that I'll have to spend, and, you know, the end of the innocence. And it just seemed like somebody really needed to, you know, buy him a drink and pick him up. So, but, you know, if you think about the fact that, you know, we were all kind of in the midst of confusion, maybe that does kind of, in retrospect, you know, would be a good backdrop for, you know, all the decisions that we were trying to make as young people, you know, facing the reality of the world. So, I don't know if that quite answers the question, but, you know, it's just a couple of things that came to mind.
No, it totally does. You know, I wasn't trying to lay the, you know, this album or these songs as that life event. I was just thinking, like, you know, if there's something that may have happened that somehow, even another, you know, another artist or another, you know, album, you know, would, you know, something that happened while you were, you know, in that moment that is now in your memory whenever you hear that song is tied to that moment. I know that.
Of any moment or just for 1989?
Well, I was thinking 1989 specifically. I don't know if there was something, you know, that you could relate to that, though.
1989. I don't know. It's hard to say. I'd have to, like, look at a list of songs and say, oh, yeah, that one.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, let's see. I could look them up real quick and see what comes to mind here. No. Okay. Because, like I said, I think it was a little bit more into like movies at that year because I'd been working for film companies. But let's see. All right. Yeah, you know, I talked about Love Shack and the B-52s when we did the New Wave podcast for this year.
Right.
And that might more be the soundtrack that that comes up to me as far as, you know, like moving. And, you know, I related to the fact that Scott said, well, I put everything that I owned in the back of my car. Yeah, I did that too when I went to Florida. And I had a little Tercel and I shoved everything I ever owned in it so that, you know, drying rats and things were hitting me in the back of the head. And my, you know, who is my eventual sister-in-law, who was like almost 6 feet tall in this tiny car with me with all this crap like shoved up against the back of our necks, driving all the way from New York to Florida. So, yeah, that might be the kind of thing that that comes up in my mind if I'm thinking about that whole road trip, you know?
Right.
Those B-52 songs.
Yeah, for me personally, I was, you know, I'm going to dig a hole. I swear to God, I'm digging a hole. but the girl that I had that experience with, you know, we had listened to the Dirty Dancing soundtrack. So I had the time of my life. You know, I don't remember if that was...
That was the time of your life.
Yeah, I don't remember if that was that specific. You know, it wasn't released that year, I'm sure. But, you know, to me, that's always part of 1989 because of that moment. So I guess that's kind of what I was digging for. But, you know, because that was what was fresh in my mind. And like I said, I'm going to change the topic here. I'm not going to stay on that. You know, so let's get something a little more positive going here. In the summer of 1989, this was huge and everybody can turn the corner without seeing the bat signal or the bat emblem on a billboard somewhere. Myself personally, I got a chance to go to the San Diego Comic-Con before it was really a big deal, and then I really got a different perspective of what Batman was. And then that whole summer, we had this big hype, and they were putting the Batman symbol on everything. I mean, you can go anywhere without seeing that. And then you go to the movie theater, and at first you're a little bit afraid because you're like, okay, they put Mr. Mom as Batman, and you're like, shit, this is going to be bad.
Yeah,
and then and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, this is fucking cool. And so I loved it. I was completely into it. Loved Jack Nicholson as a Joker. To me, it was a summer of Batman.
The real story. The love story. A woman in danger. A hero in black. The adventure you've been waiting for.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Rated PG-13, now playing at a theater near you.
You just couldn't get away from it, and I didn't want to get away from it. So, Scott, what was your experience with the movie Batman?
I remember seeing it after 1989. I don't remember it being... I remember it being huge. I mean, hugely popular.
Right.
And I loved Michael Keaton. I don't remember it standing out to me. Boy, I missed out on so far two of the topics, Don Henley and Batman. I didn't really discover Batman until years later.
We're getting into Seinfeld, so I know you're good there.
So yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'll be good there. I'm going to send you guys a picture real quick. I got to show you what I was doing on Saturday night.
Uh-oh.
You'll get it once you see the picture.
Facebook?
So, yeah, I'm going to send it in Messenger here. If I can. Wait a minute. Sorry. Bear with me. I know. The listeners are just riveted right now.
Yeah, I know. So, Suzanne, Summer of Batman. Come on. Give me
it's
something.
It's coming through now. No. So, anyway, I remember it was a good movie. I just don't remember seeing it when it came out. My wife does, though. She was a huge Batman fan, and she thinks that Michael Keaton is the end-all be-all of all Batmans. There will be no others after him. And
I like the way your wife is thinking.
Yeah, and she had, you know, the she went out and bought some Batman shirts with the neon. She had a neon pink bat symbol on a black shirt or something like that, that she said was always one of her favorites back then. So, did you see my picture come through yet?
No.
Really?
No.
No, all I see is this was on me Saturday night, but I don't see a picture.
Huh. That's weird. Oh, it hasn't sent. I'm sorry. I didn't hit send.
Ah,
there we go.
There you go. That's important.
Ding.
Oh, nice.
Oh, no. I Chrissy updated her picture. I saw that.
Yeah. Yes. That was us Saturday night. We were at a wedding.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Love it.
Anyway,
very appropriate.
For the listeners, I have the Batman mask on because it was a photo shoot. You know, one of those photo booths with all the different props. And she made me put the mask on, so...
Anyway. Should be no she made me. This should be like, hey, hell, I'm going for the Batman mask.
I couldn't wait for it.
Hey, you know, we do have a dog named Bruce Wayne, so.
Yes, I know. All right, so okay. Suzanne, Summer of Batman.
Summer of Batman. Well, I'll tell you, you have to remember that at the time, comic book movies were not a big, huge deal. Like, maybe there was that Superman series in the, like, late 70s. But, I mean, that was it. It was a big deal that they were dredging up Batman and making it into a feature film. So everybody was kind of excited. And it was, was that the Tim Burton? What is it, Tim Burton
yeah.
who started the Batman movies?
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, he was a big deal, too. So to, like, put those two together and make this campy, cartoony Batman was there was a lot of anticipation around it. And it was also, you know, it was cartoony, but it was also like the sets and everything were kind of dark. You know, Gotham was just like, you know, worse than New York City.
Yeah, it definitely was.
You know, it was just like this big, scary place. I liked the movie. I thought it was cool. I still associate it very much with Prince music. Because I think he did that whole soundtrack. He dated, you know, Kim Basinger or Bassinger, however she says her name. I still don't know. But in any case, she was probably one of the most beautiful women on the planet at the time. So it was really culture, you know, pop culture anyway, at that moment was kind of steeped in Batman. I would agree. I remember that. And it was a little bit of a gamble to say, all right, we're going to let Michael Keaton goof his way through this movie or what, how is that going to work? And it did. I would agree. I think he was my favorite Batman, maybe just because I was more, you know, I felt more like that was my Batman movie. Cause I was, you know, the younger crowd that at the time that movies are meant to be seen by. So, but, I did like his performance. I like Michael Keaton in general. I met him briefly at a theater in Pittsburgh, and he was it was kind of a riot. So, you know, I was a fan.
Awesome.
It worked for me.
I heard rumors of him reprising the role too at one point.
You mean recent rumors, or?
Yeah, I saw something going around somewhere. I can't remember what it was, Facebook or Twitter or something.
I mean, if they put him in a Spider-Man movie, then why the hell not, right? So, I mean, come on. But
and Birdman.
Yeah. And, you know, what I've always seen as difficulty with playing the character of Batman is whether you're a believable Bruce Wayne and a believable Batman. You got to be both. And
that's true.
I think he definitely was able to pull that off. And without it being too comical. So you described it earlier as campy, and I would argue that it wasn't that, but it had moments of campiness, but, you know, it was just, yeah, it was definitely a complete change as to what we were used to. Cause you know, we had Batman as 1966 Adam West. We had Batman.
Oh, no, that was really campy. It wasn't that campy like that.
Right, right. You know, and so that's kind of what we were used to as a Batman character. And then now you had this really, really Tim Burton dark take on it. And it was bizarrely cool and great all at the same time. So, Rose, what about you? What's your experiences with Batman for 1989?
I grew up in the era of the Batman TV show, Batman and Robin. They didn't actually call it that. It was called Batman. But one of my favorite shows, for sure, as a kid. And then when I found out they were actually making a movie, all I could think was, I hope they don't cast Adam West as Batman in the movie because I felt like he was too old for the role. But when I saw that it was Michael Keaton, I thought this is amazing because I had been following him for a while. And he never disappointed in any role that he played. And it was a cool movie. We didn't get to see it in theaters, but we did rent it when it came out on video. And it was a mainstay, you know, till I, you know, eventually broke down and just bought it. I'd seen it with my kids quite a few times. Jack Nicholson as the Joker seemed very appropriate to me, because, you know, he's crazy. So it's crazy really well. Kind of psychotic crazy, which is kind of what Joker was anyway, but it was different in a sense that I think it needed to have that darkness. Because you look back on that, you know, situation like that in his past with his parents dying the way they did and then him being raised, you know, I want to say emotionless, but not really, because he obviously harbored some deep-seated, you know, revenge feelings in inside of him. So he really had to suppress a lot of suppression on a daily basis. Fun fact, Prince actually auditioned for the role of Batman / Bruce Wayne, and Warner Brothers was like, no, because he was a part of their company. It's like, but we'll let you write the music for it. How's that? And he's like, yeah. So it Bat Dance to me is still like just an amazing song. Just the whole movie, it was very well done. What happened afterwards is just not even worth talking about, unfortunately. The first two were great, you know, then they just got weird. And it made me sad.
You know, sitting here thinking about this, and I didn't hear that Prince had tried out for Bruce Wayne, but I think he would have been a fucking amazing Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, it would have.
He completely could have played the aloof billionaire, you know, because that's kind of what he was. In real life.
That's true.
So it wouldn't have been a stretch. You know that he had acting chops after Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him pulling it off.
Oh. We lose Dave?
No, I'm here.
Hello.
He's like 5 foot tall, though. Or was.
Well, yeah. Okay.
He's a tiny guy.
Yeah, that would be
although
a problem.
Michael Keaton was not that tall either.
Yeah. Good point. All good points. First stop on the Wishbook catalog, if you guys are following along. I actually scrolled through to page 55.
Okay.
Big ass belt buckles. So,
big ass belt buckles.
Let's yes, get there.
Yes. I don't know if you guys remember this.
Look at that.
Yes. But I remember very much so going to like the county fair. And, you know, everything was kind of getting countrified. And to me, this was like, oh, my God, this totally reeks the, you know, the what I grew up in. So I was like, yes. I don't know if you guys had that same experience, but I was like, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, the ones that were, like, themed, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Like, the ones that say, I'd rather be fishing?
Exactly.
Heavy equipment operator on your belt buckle.
Yeah.
I did not own any large belt buckles, sorry.
No, none of those, okay.
Neither did I.
Okay.
I think my husband had, well, it wasn't my husband at the time, but I think he originally had one that was just like a great big dollar bill. I remember that, and I would never have remembered that unless you showed me this catalog page.
Oh, man, how yuppie. I mean, great.
That's funny. So, can we skip to another page?
Oh, you've got another one?
You mind?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember. You know what? Wait, I'm mistaken. It was a dollar sign, not a dollar bill.
Oh, the dollar.
Dollar sign, sure.
To be specific.
So, okay. I would like to go to page, where'd it go? 68, I think.
How long was I gone?
We're scrolling through the Sears Wish book.
Well, I'm just saying, did we completely skip Seinfeld?
No. We're going there. I stopped because I found big ass belt buckles, so and I couldn't pass it up without making a comment.
Okay.
Page 68.
Actually, no. It's where did it go? Why am I
68?
68 is electric razors.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
There's a table of contents in the top left hand corner. Just FYI. You can skip to whatever page you want.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
It was watches.
Oh, yeah. I saw those before. You're talking about all the electronic watches.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are way back in the beginning. Yeah.
Where did it go? Oh, it's maybe it was 58. Oh, there it is. Here we go. It's 38. Well, I can't read anymore, apparently. 38 and 39. So they have the calculator watches, which were huge back then. And
okay. Yeah. I see.
They were, you know, like Casio or whatever it was. Casio. So I had the calculator watches. And then if you look at the next page over, it's 38 and 39. 39 had video game watches, which I believe I had one. I can't remember what it was, but it was it was a video game of some sort. Like, it wasn't Pac-Man. I think this might have been a few years earlier too, that the first calculator ones, but the, video game ones were out there. So that shows you how far smartwatches have come.
Yeah. 15 is, on that page is Pac-Man. And that looks just horribly bad. I think I'd rather have the race car one, 17. Soccer.
Oh, yeah, number 7, pole position.
Yeah. Well, they don't call it that, though. They just say driving ace with driving. This car game watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Nintendo watches. Look at that.
if you flip one more page over to the next set of watches, they have ones that are similar to Swatch watches, or where you can change the face out with the different color bands. And there's a Batman one on that page too.
Oh, I see that. Page 40.
Okay. 40. Yeah, I got page 43 for that, but I see the Batman.
Yeah, I have 43 too. You know, I think I had a Swatch around this time. Were they still making them? I had a Swatch around that time. My one and only Swatch. I really can't wear watches. I destroy them because I have little tiny wrists. And they always seem to like bang around, but the Swatch was so rubbery, you know, like it was almost like translucent rubber in these neon colors, that I think it absorbed the damage before, and it lasted longer than most. But yeah, that was a big fad with the great big Swatch watches.
Yes, really was.
Crazed by the holidays?
Relax, we've got you covered.
Bosses,
buddies,
surfers. Wild ones,
superstars,
executives,
scientists,
conservatives,
eccentrics, technocrats,
VIPs,
perfectionists,
goalies,
mommies,
wardens,
experts, time is running out!
But we're not. Swatch.
We've got the perfect gift for everyone!
All right, so to Rose's point, you know, going back to now it should be just a happy memory for everybody. Seinfeld started in 1989, introduced us to yada, 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 No Soup for You, and so many great iconic phrases like being a master of your own domain. You know, and so there's so many things that all I've got to do is mention those phrases and all of a sudden you get it, because if you would have been on the Seinfeld train in the ride, you would have been there and you would have been like, oh yeah, that's that episode. You know, much like when Suzanne and I were talking about Friends, you know, you tend to really get into certain episodes and those become your most iconic. And I swear to God, my wife and I still say No Soup for You. You know, and it's not an inside joke. Anybody that watches Seinfeld gets it. But you know, it started in 89, and obviously it was a very big major part of the 1990s. But this introduced us to that motley crew of characters in a show about nothing. Were you a big Seinfeld fan?
No, I wasn't. I didn't have like any animosity against them. Although I would tune in every so often just to watch Michael Richards, because so crazy. And he definitely was off balance. So.
That's a good way to describe him.
It was really a giant hair.
Yeah, I know. Him and reaction face, as they call it. He's probably like the king of reaction face. But every so often I would watch an episode and it made me laugh. My least favorite character on the show was George Costanza. He just drove me nuts. Such a whiny shit. I'm sure that's what he was going for. I hope, you know.
Yeah.
And Louis Dreyfus' character Elaine was just, I could not believe that. You know, it's just like, I don't even know anybody like you, and how do you get away with half of the stuff that you get away with? So crazy. She's like, you know, if you could put like, you know, a label on her, he's like, that's no lady, even though she looks, you know, very well put together and, you know, refined, but she totally isn't. You know, it's just so crazy how you know, her character was just really out there, but she was funny.
Can you spare a square?
I really can't. I can't.
Can't spare a square.
Can't spare a square.
And is he sponge worthy?
That was a good one. That was a good episode.
One of my favorite lines, and we use this very, very often when we go out on the boat. If it's a little rough out there, you know, George had, he was telling the story about when he rescued a whale because he was pretending to be a marine biologist. And it was when Kramer had been gone, you know, practicing golf by hitting golf balls into the ocean. And George starts telling the story. He says,
She was angry that day, my friends. You know,
I just referenced that today with something somebody did on Facebook. Yeah, I think she blew something up in her oven. like the squash was angry that day, my friends.
Yeah, so we use that quite a bit when it gets a little bit rougher out there, you know, on the boat. So I know, poor me. Yeah, we were just out there like a week and a half ago. It was a good day. Uh-huh. It's nice, beautiful day.
The whales, though.
In December. I mean, in end of November. No whales. No. No. Is that a titleist? I swear, I there's so many things from this show that when they say it's a show about nothing, it's completely opposite. It's a show about everything. Everything that happens on that show is stuff that happens every day to so many people. It's stupid little things.
It's true.
Yeah. Although some of it's a little on the extreme side. You know, like when Kramer almost cooked himself in his hot tub. And Newman.
The butter.
Newman's like, he was like on a, I don't know, he was trying not to eat turkey or something, or he wasn't eating something. And he smelled Kramer with the butter on him.
Like he's had like delusions and like hallucinations of him as a turkey.
Yes, that's one of the funniest episodes where they show Kramer looks over, he's a turkey, and his head looks over at the camera or whatever, and he does one of his just crazy expressions that Michael Richards does so well.
And he waves with the turkey wing.
Yeah, I know. That's great. So I actually had a little bit of a reputation of being like Kramer, not in like his weird, crazy ways. But when I was delivering, you know, I would go and I was always in a hurry. So I would come flying into doors, and one of my customers just always made fun of me. It was like, you come through that door just like Kramer. You know, flying through the way Kramer would walk into Jerry's apartment every day.
Nice.
Yeah, it's classic stuff. It's really one of my favorite shows. Especially going into the 90s, it was something that was on all the time. So, yeah, a lot of great lines.
I'd actually just referenced it the other day because there was some cables I was trying to run underneath my desk. And one of the guys comes up and he's like, "Why is Dave underneath this desk?" And I was like, "Oh, I was just doing a Costanza."
You're building your own little fort down there.
Yeah, build a shelf for the alarm clock so that you can sleep under it.
Yes. Suzanne, okay. What's your experience with Seinfeld?
I have to say, I think Seinfeld is probably one of the best shows that's ever been on television. It's hysterical. It's as exaggerated as their ridiculous faults are. I think it is all based in reality and just like the real quirks that people have and don't want to admit to anybody. But yet this show, just like, that's the show that and all those embarrassing, stupid little things that you would never want to tell anybody that you went through.
They exaggerate them a little bit.
Right. That's what they focus on, like three or four of those per show. And it just never ends. And it was such a consistent show from year to year to year to year. Maybe they had a little bit of a ramp up from the first couple episodes. If you look back, it's that those are a little different. But it was so strong for so long and so just jam-packed full of gags. It was just hysterical. The way they could just come up with situation after situation and be that funny and make you that like uncomfortable, like you just like wince through the whole thing, like, oh my god, how did he get himself into that situation? You know, he's like throwing the grandmother and the walker out of the way as he runs out of the apartment that he mistakenly set on fire. Or he's trying to get like the death certificate of somebody so he can get a free flight back on the airline, and just it never ends. And just the endless the endless parade of different girlfriends that Jerry has, and every one of them just has some ridiculous thing wrong with them that he can't help but, like, you know, suddenly that's the only thing he will see is that, like, so-and-so's hands are too big.
Yeah, or... that man hands. That's a great episode. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Or, I think, or Two-Face.
Oh, yeah. She'd be scary.
Yeah.
Like, light would change, and she'd be like,
da-da. Wow, yeah. They really did some good stuff with lighting in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had, and then the one that was that her name, her she was a blonde Caucasian girl, but her last name was Chang, and she was like, she would act like she was Asian, you know, she would talk like she was Asian. But, do you remember that one?
Like, I don't know if I remember that one, but that sounds
so
very
it's so bizarre. Like, they just really pulled some crazy characters out for that. I gotta ask you guys, do you know a low talker or a close talker?
I think I am a low talker.
No, you're not a low talker. We can hear you perfectly fine. You would never, you've never asked us to wear the puppy shirt.
That's the puppy
shirt.
That's
shirt.
True. I would never do that to any of you. Well, maybe
know,
back in '82.
I actually do know a couple of low talkers, and you really got to lean in and, you know, have them repeat what they're saying often. It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. No close talkers. No.
I've met a couple people that are, they're semi close talkers. They stand a little too close sometimes. They just slightly invade your space. Not like Judge Reinhold's character did. The close talker. He's like right up, you know, nose to nose practically. Hey, how you doing, Jerry?
Everybody like has to take a step back.
Yeah.
You know? Or I think I've quizzed my friends as to if you were on Jerry Seinfeld's show, like what thing would he be making fun of that you did? Like, you know, would he be calling you like the regifter, or, you know, who was that, like the dentist who was always chewing dentine gum or something that he'd make fun of, or like what? What thing is it that you would do that Jerry would name you after that thing?
That's a fun game.
Oh, my God. I would definitely need to think about that.
So I used to work for a guy. I took a year off from FedEx and worked for in telecom for this guy, Bill. And he is the biggest Seinfeld fan I have ever known. Do you remember this, Dave?
I totally do, yes.
I told you what to put on your resume when you were job searching, because he's in the IT field. So I told Dave, you know, if you want a good in, put down there, like bury it deep down in your resume that you worked for Vandalay. Vandalay.
Art Vandalay.
Yeah,
Art Importer Vandalay. Importer exporters.
Say Vandalay.
I put it in my introduction email to him, but I did not put it in my resume. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Either
he
way,
totally got it though. He totally
he
did.
Got
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He. We bought him the Seinfeld, you know, trivia game back when we were hanging out with him more often, and we went over there, and his wife, we were all playing. And he completely smoked us. I mean, it wasn't even a contest. And then,
speaking of the contest.
Yeah. Oh, the contest. Nice. Nice reference.
You can't let that one go.
Yeah. And Kramer left the room for like 15 minutes, came back. He already lost.
Yeah, it was like,
oh. I'm out. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. So, yes, I'm guessing that Seinfeld was an important part of some of our experience.
It sounds like
Rose
it, yes.
Sounded like she wasn't as into it as we are, but. So anyway, are you still there, Rose?
Yeah. I'm okay. Here.
Just making sure.
Thank you, Darla.
And by the way, page 248 on the Sears catalog, who in the world decided to put RoboCop on a kid's sweater?
I don't know.
It's not appropriate, not age appropriate. Come on.
I'm checking out this guy on page 130 with the red unitard pajamas. That sounds good.
130. Wait, 130?
All right,
hold on.
130.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on, Matt. We got to get to 130 now.
Oh, my.
Oh.
Yeah, that. Does he need one of those wardrobe adjustments?
Whoa, hello. Oh,
no, one of those, like, long... You said it. I can't say that word without laughing. I don't know. I'm going to stay away from that. But you get my drift in the red long johns.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Just hanging out, reading the Bible or something next to
me. I was going to ask, what the hell is he reading? There? Is that the Bible?
That's his little black book. He's looking for his next date.
Yeah, it's his passport. He's going overseas. Yeah, Nutcracker.
You think it's got one of those
little those pajamas?
Does it have one of those little flaps back?
Oh, God. Is it one piece? It's true. What have you got? It's a grown-up onesie.
Is that one piece or two pieces?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
I can't read. I can't zoom in to read the description.
It's kind of crazy because it's like, you know, it takes something like this to put things in perspective. You know, catalogs are not geared around real life, clearly, because I don't know a whole lot of men that hang out with each other wearing pajamas, but I could be wrong.
Every other weekend, I don't know.
At the ski lodge, maybe, yeah. I don't know.
Ski lodge, yeah, that's a good...
I think it's one piece. I was able to zoom into the description and it says...
Oh, the next page is even better.
Union suit has strong reinforced front and one button vertical flap seat.
Oh, holy crap. One button? I wonder how many of those they sold.
It's polyester and acrylic for durability.
Oh, my God. Construction.
Inner layer is Trevera. Polyester and comfortable, absorbent cotton.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
That oh man.
Awesome.
Oh wait, if you expand it, you can see what book he's reading. Hold on.
Oh.
All right. Let's do it.
It's only only $23.99, by the way. So, if you want the average size.
Ooh, what is that? Is that Great Expectations?
I can't tell. It's some kind of leather bound thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very. His office smells of mahogany, and he has many leather bound books.
Oh my gosh, too funny.
Now you said the next page. Are you talking about the guy in like the tank top?
Yeah.
That's some cool hair he's got, though.
That's a massively cool hair.
Yeah.
Sweeping. That's got
very nicely coiffed, is what that is.
Yeah, thank you. That's a perfect word for that one. Oh, God, these ugly sweaters.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of them in here.
European styling of our Italian sweaters combines the look and feel of wool.
Not really wool. It just kind of feels.
It's in the neighborhood.
It ain't wool, but it feels like it. God, idiot.
What is it? Oh, don't ask.
Oh, look, so awesome.
Looking back at these catalogs, last week when we did when we recorded 1979, that was one of the funnest part of the show.
Yeah, that was a funny catalog.
This is classic stuff. I'm looking forward to 1999 too, see what they actually have to offer. If it's
because when did they get rid of that? When did they phase these out?
Well, Sears was still around, and the internet was not super strong yet in 1999, so Okay. I gotta figure they had to have a pretty good size catalog at that time too.
Ooh, the toy section.
I know.
Right. It looks like the final Sears catalog came out in 1993.
Oh, much.
We're not gonna get one for 99. That's what I just did a quick search and that's what it said. So.
Huh.
That's a bummer.
Suzanne's Google skills matches mine.
Man, yeah.
That was quick.
Got some serious Google skills over there. Awesome.
Wow. So, do you have any more pages that you guys want to touch on? Because I have a couple more.
Well, I just want to mention for headlines, Game Boy came out in 1989.
Oh, that's one of the pages I was going to mention, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Let's go there. Where is it?
Let's see. Game Boy, where's my notes? Is 408, I think.
Wow.
Oh, boy, really
around there. 408 or around.
Gotta scroll ahead here. Jeez, come on.
My numbers at the top of the page is not right compared to what the book is telling me.
407, I got Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, it's 4...
I had those in the 70s.
Yeah, 408.
Well, they transitioned.
Yeah, 408, and then the next page, 409, has Nintendo. One of the, you know, the original Nintendo with all the accessories and stuff.
Yeah, what I'm looking at is all the like board games. Is it past the board games?
It's past the board games.
Okay.
Go about four or five more pages, flip through. You'll get checkers, chess, and then you'll get into Game Boy with a, there's a remote control car in there.
Okay, we got all the electronic games.
I see it.
Games.
All right, try 414. That's what I have on my browser.
That's so
414. Yeah, for 89.47.
So it says,
yes,
that they're out of sync.
Yeah, it says that at the top of the page where you see the pages listed, but if you look at the actual book page, it says 408. Like if you zoom into the book
page.
Okay,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's why. That's
ninja,
what I was,
is that a Ninja Turtle down there?
That is totally a turtle. Yes.
Red.
That's totally a turtle. My God.
Who had the red mask? Was that Donatello?
I thought it was Raphael.
Raphael?
I think it was Raphael.
I wasn't a turtle fan. You're lucky I knew that was a turtle.
I had kids. I had to know.
All the video games are in the next like 5 to 10 pages.
Yeah, early Mario logo here.
Of course, I gotta put Duck Hunt as like the one that's on the TV that they're advertising for.
Totally, Duck Hunt was one of the best games ever.
Yeah, and you can't shoot that damn dog.
That snickers at you.
It's like, take that, oh you bastard.
They said it wasn't humanly possible. All the power and excitement of Nintendo right in the palm of your hand. Introducing Game Boy. It's portable, it's in stereo, and its games are interchangeable. Game Boy comes complete with batteries and the outrageous new game, Tetris. And for head-to-head competition, use Video Link and blow your opponent away. Game Boy, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, portable power.
Link goes into Atari for Nintendo, Sega, Atari, all those games in the next page.
Sega Genesis.
Good stuff. Yeah, I had a Sega Genesis.
Graphics.
Yeah, they're 16 bit, so you know.
My God.
Look out.
Oh, this reminds me. I think I played Lemmings at this point.
Nice. Lemmings, that's a really good reference right there. That was
I didn't play a lot of games, but my husband did introduce me to that one in like 1990
and
91. So screwed up, they would all fall off the cliff and just like scream. One after the other.
Let's see, I had some other ones.
Radio patrol cars.
There was back in like right around 167 ish, 160 in the 160s, upper 160 pages. There's a lot of the sportswear, you know, like team logos and all that stuff. I don't know why, but they were heavily marketing Chicago teams. like as the models. Mm. You know, they have like a lot of Bears gear, some Cubs gear, a lot of Bulls gear, which the Bulls were about to become, you know, just amazing in the next decade. But it was just weird. I noticed a lot of Chicago, like the models or the main pictures of the shirts and sweats were a lot of Bears gear, which I'm a Bears fan, so it was kind of fun to look at that. Anyway.
Yeah, wow, they were kind of stuck on the Bears, huh?
Yeah, they really did, like, a lot. And this was, you know, 4 years after they won the Super Bowl, so you'd think they'd let that go eventually, but us Bears fans are still hanging on that 85 team. Now, there was one other thing that I noticed, which was kind of funny, and it was back on page 74, and it was these laced collared dresses that were really popular, and Elaine even wore some of those types of dresses on Seinfeld.
What page?
Where did it go? Hold on. 74. Sorry, back to 70.
Right, not 74? Not 170.
Either, no, it's 74, and it was...
Okay. 74. Now, I see what it is, that the actual page number for the book does not correspond. The page is in the browser. I think it's page 80.
Oh, okay.
Because I see the lace collar dresses. And, you know, I kind of remember these. I did not wear these when I had my daughter... I think I dressed her in these a few years later.
I had one of those.
Yeah.
I had one later.
Those are pretty good shoulder pads there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Still.
Puffy sleeves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely not Mr. Fashion, but it feels like it needs a belt.
It was a little slouchy, the ones in the picture. Yeah. But if you go to, in the browser, it's page 84. I remember around this time, these like weird, like flapper revival drop waist dresses like you see here.
That purplish blue one, or whatever, royal blue.
Yeah,
whatever.
It's like, where does your figure go? It just disappears in this type of dress. But there was a little trend that was going on.
But then you got this big ass bow. Slouched off your hips there.
Yeah, like how awkward is that?
What the fuck is that?
Whose idea was that? I don't know. But I do remember wearing one of those to a wedding with a friend of mine. So
nice. And then of course you go further on into the where they show them wearing jeans and see how high-waisted their
jeans are. Yeah, the high-waisted jeans. Yeah, I saw that before.
How far into it do you go before? After all the funky granny dresses? Or...
Yeah. The high-waist jeans, and then a lot of pants were pleated.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Yeah, like the mom jeans era.
Casual weekends. That's what they were called.
Kind of a little bit of like pale acid wash here. Yeah.
Yeah. Acid wash.
So you kind of see that on Friends, but they're also skinny that they can get away with it. But a real person in pleated jeans is not that attractive.
Because one on page 98, she looks like she looks like she's 98 pounds. So I don't know.
Which one is that?
The one on page 98, the rustic something or other.
Oh, look at all those pleats. Jeez.
Yeah. Her waist is like a 12 or something.
Talking about the gray turtleneck or the one next to it?
Yeah, gray turtleneck, yeah. Rustic weekend. Now, 1450. Mm-hmm.
She kind of looks like somebody from one of the Jerry's girlfriends or something.
Could have been.
Maybe we found that movie star we were looking for.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. The fashions were great.
All right. So Rose and Suzanne, page 105. Would you wear that out? Like, would you go to like the store wearing that?
Okay,
105.
Page 105.
I'm looking at fleece pants.
Okay. Yes, fleece pants.
No, I don't know. That looks like pajamas to me.
Okay, so maybe I'd wear the pants, but I wear a different top.
Okay.
Well, maybe, but those are not my colors, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, not mine either, but I'm just saying. I wouldn't wear all pastel unicolor outfit. That's just asking for trouble. Seriously.
It's like an Easter egg. Yeah. All over the place.
Don't love it.
No, totally don't.
Look at Reeboks, though. Look at those shoes.
Yes.
Oh, now I've got the great like, L.A. gear. Ooh,
L.A.
shoes.
Gear.
Yeah, yeah. I used to go to aerobics and, like, wear the high-ankle, big clunking sneakers with the, like, you would Velcro two big strips across the front to get it to close.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
With the big slouchy socks.
Yeah, oh, I love slouchy socks. I wish they'd bring those back. Those are so comfortable.
Yeah, I did like those with, like, say, leggings, big slouchy socks, and, like, a pair of ankle boots.
Oh,
That was a cute, like, late 80s, early 90s look.
Yeah.
Those are actually Oxfords.
Page 109 with sweatshirts.
109. Let's do it.
Best grandma on earth.
Yeah, and rain. Reindeer,
this R-A-I-N. Here to make it funny. So stupid.
Yuletide.
These two, lady. God.
Oh, it's got the California raisins on that one.
Are those the California raisins?
Yes.
Sweet.
I couldn't see her wearing that for real.
Just a little cornball.
Like, you're paying me extra for this, damn it.
You know, if you're looking for a good Christmas cheesy sweater, this is where to get it, right there. That one. That'd
yeah. Great. And this was before they even thought about ugly sweaters. There was sweaters like this that created the ugly sweater movement.
All right, wait.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so talk about like a unicolor outfit. Go to page 112.
I'm already.
Ah, love it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What? Now,
these are jams. These are pajamas. Gotta be.
Are they? No, they're not.
They're
not
getting
the pajama section, is it?
It's getting right into it.
Oh, it's maybe. Like I don't know. Yeah. I can't really tell.
Loungewear. That's what it is.
Loungewear.
It's loungewear. Yes, that's right.
It's for when you go to the lounge.
Yeah.
To sip your scotch.
It's a sporty jumpsuit, is what it is.
Now, think to yourself, these are like the skinniest women on earth who are in these books that are modeling this stuff. And look at what she looks like in
there. Check out those shoes. Those are sneakers. She's wearing sneakers with this. She's going out.
She should probably rethink that.
Those are LA Gear workout shoes.
Are they really?
I had the LA Gears. Yeah. I had the LA Gears. I'm much bigger than that, though. For relaxed, comfortable dressing at home, enjoy the holidays in bright jewel tone loungewear. That is what it says. So, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure what it means, but I wouldn't want to be caught dead in it.
Mm. Yeah, that's what you transition from street clothes into loungewear before you go into bedtime attire, I guess. I don't know. I take my clothes off when I get home from work, and I'm right into the PJs. That's it. No loungewear for me.
Yeah. Yoga pants. That's what yoga pants are for. And they're still far more attractive than this outfit. Okay. So now that we've ripped all these women and their clothing apart.
Do you want to do some headlines maybe?
Yeah, I think that might be good.
I think we should.
It's so fun though.
It is so tough to get away from this catalog, is what it is.
They knew what they were doing. Sending them things.
Big, bulky, button-down thing with an elastic waist. I don't get it.
Yeah, here we go. Page 180. The denim jackets.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I have moved on. People in history, come on now.
Okay.
All right, so news headlines. Is there anything specifically? Oh, very good. Nice transition, Scott.
Take a tape.
Yeah. Is there something that popped out at you on that news headlines?
Uh, No. I mean, well, there's a lot of stuff that happened that year. The Tiananmen Square was huge. I think that's the one that really like jumped out at me the first as far as like the stuff that was really intense, what was going on. So
I would
agree. Put that there. I think I remember, you know, like Time every year does their Person of the Year. I think that year they chose as Person of the Year whatever anonymous student that was who stood in front of the tanks.
Okay.
Did you remember that image?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There was one young guy, you know, because they were all like 20-year-olds out there, like college students and stuff out there, they were rolling the tank down the middle of the street, and one kid went and just stood in the middle of the street in front of the tank, like, go ahead, run me over. And that kind of became the iconic image of that movement.
Yep. Definitely. Yeah.
And something else like in that realm was the Berlin Wall coming down.
Yeah.
That was
deal.
That was big. So Dave, you usually like to go through some of the prices. You want to read some of those?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at trying to find out who the Person of the Year was for 1989, and it was Mikhail Gorbachev.
Yeah. Uh-oh. It was a big deal.
Let's see. So looking at that page, is that the top or the bottom? I think it's at the bottom.
Top.
It's at the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Cost of living, 1989. So where were we at? Average cost of new home, $120,000. Average income per year was $27,450. 1 gallon of gas cost you 97 cents. Wow. Sign me up. let's see. Postage stamps were 25 cents. You get your BMW 325 for $21,400.
That's cheap.
Yeah.
That's not a bad price, really. Thinking about it now.
You could have gotten your ham and cheese pizza for $2.59. Ritz crackers were blowing you for $1.79.
Which is a very random pick.
Yes, I was trying to figure out why that was there, but okay. And the Ghostbusters tabletop pinball was $19.85. Interesting.
That's expensive.
Yeah. It seems very apropos for like the year, you know, like it was, so, you know, let's price it the same as like the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. My God, price of a gallon of gas, 97 cents. Wow, how we've changed.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, it took a long time for the gas to really start to rise. I remember before I moved to Pennsylvania, which was just like 2004, the gas was only like $1.25, $1.50 around then. You know, like it didn't really start to completely shoot up for, you know, for a while. But those days are long gone.
Yeah. Yep. And which kind of is a segue into what I'm about to bring up, and that's the Exxon Valdez spill.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that being on, like, being talked about all the time.
Yeah, that was dominating the headlines for a long time, yeah. Some areas of wildlife, 25 years later, some areas of the wildlife were still being negatively impacted. Wow.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, and the thing was, wasn't that captain impaired or something? They found out that wasn't even just an
impaired,
accident.
He was drunk.
Yeah, he was drunk.
Yes, he was.
Nice way of saying
and
impaired.
And he ran away from the scene or something after that, if I remember. It was just horrifying.
That was so polite how you put that. He was impaired.
I didn't want to go from memory to try and figure out exactly what it was that he was impaired by, but once you guys agreed with the assessment.
I'm pretty sure he was he was drinking,
He ran away? I don't remember that.
I think so. I think he tried to flee the scene. I'm going from memory.
That is so grade
school. Maybe that was the guy who crashed the ferry. around that time.
Yeah, that's totally grade school. That's the I hit the ball that broke the glass and then run.
Maybe, I don't know. But in any case, that was horrifying.
Yeah, there's some tragedies that year, just very, very heavy stuff that happened that year.
Yeah.
Is there any other headlines you guys saw that jumped
out? The Ayatollah Khomeini died.
Uh-huh.
I remember that was kind of a big deal because it was under his regime that they, captured the American hostages in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And he was behind this whole movement. You know, they thought he was like the second coming or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Ted Bundy was executed in 1989.
Yeah, I saw that one too. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Took him long enough.
Yeah. Definitely.
So I was looking, as you scroll down on that page, it shows, you know, some of the other top movies that were out there, just to lighten the subject matter a little bit. There are some other great movies that came out other than Batman. You had Back to the Future 2, Parenthood, which I have a story about Parenthood. That was when I moved from California to Chicago. I told the story before that I drove, caravan with another friend of mine that was moving to Nebraska at the time. And when we stopped, in, I think it was New Mexico to stay the night. Yeah, I think it was Tucumcari, New Mexico. We went and saw Parenthood because we kind of rolled into town like at 3 or 4 o'clock and we're like, you know, we're just wiped out. We don't want to go any further. And we ended up going to see the movie that later that evening before we went to the hotel and Parenthood. I just remember being such a funny movie and great.
It was
great one with Steve Martin and Rick Moranis and, several other big names. Great, great movie. So
always that was a terrific cast.
Yeah, it was. And then When Harry Met Sally came out that year.
See, that's one of those perfect movies, When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah. Twins, another perfect movie. I'm your brother. Vincent, I'm your brother.
That's a good impression of him.
It's not a tumor.
No, that's the wrong movie. But yeah, when Harry Met Sally, though, I'm always thinking of the deli scene when Meg Ryan mm-hmm. is doing the fake orgasm.
Yeah.
Classic.
I'll have what she's having.
Which was ad libbed.
And that was actually Rob Reiner's
mom. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
And just in general, like when you had said, well, what song do you have in the background when you felt you were having a big going through big changes there in 1989? I don't know. With this movie, I remember the anxiety of like sitting and watching them go through their lives stage by stage. When I'm kind of in the middle of my life, saying, "Is anything going to work out? What the hell am I going to do with myself?" You know, I remember seeing that film, and it was a great film and it's a funny film, but just it reminding me that I was at a very anxious place. So
yeah,
I felt it. I felt that uncertainty of where life was going and who you're going to end up with in the end.
God, scenes are coming back to me now when Harry, like Carrie Fisher and what was the guy's name?
Bruno Kirby.
Yeah, Bruno Kirby. When they're they're married or whatever, and they do the Pictionary or win, lose, or draw, game at their house. Baby fish mouth. Baby fish
baby
mouth.
Baby fish mouth.
What the hell's baby fish mouth? Or the wagon wheel table that he wanted to keep and Carrie Fisher couldn't stand and finally Billy Crystal just says, "It's an ugly table, get rid of her," or whatever. Yeah. That's a stupid table.
I thought you liked the table. I was being nice. Next scene, it's out on the curb. You know, he's putting it out on the curb. He says, "Don't say a word."
So let me understand this. You made a woman meow?
That's a good one. I forgot about that.
It's like, forget about everything else you've just said. Wait a minute, you did what?
Yeah. So anyway, several great movies out that year.
Yes. I focused on the technology headlines. The 486 processor came out. Those that don't know, that was the precursor to the Pentium chip, which came out like the next generation for that. So 486 back then was like the shit. And, you know, obviously it's something that's we've blown the doors off of, you know, technology-wise.
Yeah.
I wonder what that – I wonder what the megahertz, the speed of the megahertz on that 486 processor was.
Oh, dear God. That was a long time ago. Gotta be like, yeah.
I remember when my buddy – this was back in like 86 or something, 85, that he got – his family got a new PC, an IBM compatible. It was actually an IBM. And it was the processor was 4 megahertz.
Yes.
Yeah. But then I think by 89, it had to be up in the, you know, 16, 20 megahertz range by that point.
Yeah, I don't remember at all. But yeah.
That would take a little bit of research to figure that one out.
And the other thing that I thought was of note was the first release of Microsoft Office, which even to this day is giving your IT department a headache dealing with licensing. So thank you, Microsoft, for bringing us that gift ever since 1989. So the gift that keeps giving every time they change how they're going to do their licensing format.
Right. Yeah. Is it Microsoft 365?
Do you have the web version? Do you have the actual installed version? Oh, there's a different license for that, and it's like, thank you, Microsoft.
Yeah, but like Windows was kind of impossible to use until like Windows 95 came out, and that was still a way off. So
yeah, very very much so. Yeah, I mean at this point it still would have been like Windows Workgroups or
you would still probably boot through DOS.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There weren't even icons. Like the Macs were able to do that kind of stuff. That had they had a decent operating system significantly before Windows did. It wasn't even Windows yet. I don't know. I forget what it was. What was it before it was Windows?
Well, I know in what we were using in the office in the Navy was we had the it'd boot up into DOS, but then we'd load something like WordPerfect. That was kind of the thing. You had to know like Shift F6 to print or whatever it was. But I remember, if you didn't have one of those templates on your keyboard, you were fucked. You were like, what the hell? How do I do this? So.
Yeah. This was the first year that you were like kind of sat down in front of a computer to say, here's your operating system. I mean, I remember the first time somebody in a work environment sat me down in front of a computer, I think was like 1991 at an advertising agency that I worked at.
Well, I mean, you still had office applications, or you still had productivity applications that you would have been using. I don't want to say the word office because Microsoft used that for their, you know, office suite. But you had things like WordPerfect, or you had, you know, you were booting into like a DOS, and you just have to know that you had to, run the executable in order to start the program. It wasn't a point and click world too much. I mean, it was somewhat, but not. I got so comfortable with the DOS world, I always jumped out of whatever pretty GUI it was because I knew DOS. But, you know, when you got to 95, 98, then you were kind of like, well, it's just easier to point, click, copy, paste, blah, blah, blah. But for those of us that kind of grew up in the DOS world, you were like, I don't know. You know, this is what I'm used to. So.
Okay, I'm kind of remembering, yeah, in 1989 when I did work for that second-run film company, they had computers, but it wasn't an operating system. It was just like one of those proprietary screens where you filled in the fields when you wanted to order the films, you know?
Right,
yeah. And you kind of tabbed your way through it.
Right.
Yeah, there was no mouse and pointer or anything like that. You couldn't.
Right.
That wasn't available quite yet.
It didn't come yet, yeah.
At least on.
Weird.
On a large scale. I know they'd been working on that kind of stuff for a while.
Well, the Max had something like that.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, mm-hmm. if you wanted a pretty, a pretty format like that, then you had like a Mac. Everyone else kind of just dealt with knowing, you know, the executable that you had to run for the program that you wanted to start up. And a lot of it was tabbing and getting to the right field.
Right.
Yeah.
So in general, maybe this is a pretty significant year as far as technology goes for that reason, because people actually started functioning with computer screens, you know, in their workplace and such.
Right.
You know, when I worked at Columbia Pictures two years before, we had nothing. We had no – I didn't have a computer on the desk. It wasn't till 1989.
Yeah, it sounds about right. So any other headlines that are grabbing you guys from that sheet?
The Berlin Wall came down.
Berlin Wall. Yeah, that was significant.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
God, you remember Ronald Reagan? You know, what was his phrase? Take down that wall?
Yeah.
Tear down that wall. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's why he eventually ended up being the person of the year instead of that poor guy who stood in front of the tank.
Pivotal,
yeah,
in our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think we were just resigned to the fact that maybe that wall was always going to be there, and that communism was always going to be a factor in everybody's lives as the, you know, the evil empire.
Yeah.
And to see that start to crumble, like, really made you feel like you were, number one, a part of history, and number two, that, you know, our lives aren't always going to be the same. You know, anything can happen out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people have, like, pieces of the wall. Like, as, like, you know, part of their keepsake collection.
I was thinking about that, too.
That'd be interesting to find out.
I wonder if there's a place on eBay that you can find people selling pieces of the Berlin Wall. Because they didn't have the internet back then, or eBay. Because that shit would have went quick. Like, buy a piece of the Berlin Wall.
Okay. Looking it up, quick search says 45,000 walls in existence. 480 million pieces. I don't know. That's just a little total like Google came up with on the fly here. I guess there's a lot of, you know, chips when you knock down something like that.
So I'm still like scrolling through the catalog, and I'm looking at Panama Jack. Do you guys remember that being a big deal? Yep. Page 181. No. Panama Jack shirts.
I already closed mine.
You already closed that? All right.
Oh, God.
I'll trust you.
Okay.
Panama Jack. Now, this doesn't sound that familiar. I forget what it was.
I'm going to Google Panama Jack because I don't even know what
it's called. It's just really just a brand name. I'm trying to think of the best equivalent to, you know, what people might relate to.
Was there a lot, like, bars with that name on it or liquor or something? Why am I thinking alcohol?
I don't think so.
You need a drink?
Maybe.
Okay. Oh, speaking of drink.
Sunscreen.
Yeah.
Are we going to do our drunken
podcast.
Oh my god. Oh.
Oh god. I'm purposely drunk in podcasts as long as we don't have to like captain an oil tank or anything. I'm good with it.
Do you not recall the Burt Reynolds episode, Rose?
What are you talking about?
We did the Burt Reynolds episode and Dave and I were trashed.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did you like announce that you were trashed, or you just
we've both been just
it kind of
tying one on all day long, and it just kind of caught up with us by the end of the podcast. I mean, you can totally hear us just slurring our words every it's really and I was even like so embarrassed. I sent Dave a message. I'm like, dude, we should pull that one. That should not be out there. Dave's like, no, we're going to leave it. And I'm like, all right.
It's the real us, man. It's the real us.
Yeah. Not always.
No.
I mean, well, most of the time, but, you know.
Speaking of which, are you tullying tonight?
Yeah, I had a little glass. Okay. I tullied a little too much last night at that wedding, so.
I gotcha. The day after, it's kind of like, I'm not really interested.
Yeah. I had a little smidge for the beginning of the show. I guess so. Yeah.
What do you got, Rose?
I said you guys aren't calling it spearing anymore.
Oh.
When's the last time you used that spear? The spear.
I haven't used it in a while. I have a different glass now, and it doesn't really sit in there well. So.
Oh.
It's a different kind of snifter, kind of a glass deal. Anyway.
Suzanne, just so your own edification and knowledge, and to give you a little bit of update on Bonsai Retro Club history, Scott had gotten a I don't know what you call it. It's just an ice.
It's a mold, like an ice mold.
That was in the shape of the Death Star from Star Wars. So you have that?
Oh, you have those? Yeah.
I have that.
Okay. So he would have a drink, and it would have this big sphere. So then we started referring to it as spheering.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I could join right in. I have that in my refrigerator. I told you we're geeky at my house.
Yeah. Can we wrap this up? It's getting kind of late. I got to get going.
Yeah, geez.
Dude, be that way.
I think we've covered everything.
I don't want 1989 to end, man.
We didn't want the New Wave episode to end either. We kept going.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, we'll do it your way.
God. Okay.
Darn all to hell. I didn't even get to the toy section yet. All right.
Yeah, we won't have a catalog to browse through in 1999, obviously now. So it's a little sad.
We'll have to find something that we can at least look at the fashion for 1999. So if you guys come up with something between now and next week that we can kind of, peruse through and at least get the fashion sense, I think that would be the fun part.
Okay.
All right. So with that all being wrapped up, we want to remind everybody we have a website out there. That's BonsaiRetroClub.com. That's BanzaiI, not to be confused with Little Trees. If you want to go to our website, check us out, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook. We're starting to get a lot more activity on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, please do follow and like us on that, social media. For everybody that's following us on, iTunes and Podbean, we really appreciate you guys, specifically Podbean, because we continue to get new followers daily. Through that app. So thank you very much to all of you that are following along on that. And if you want to leave us any kind of comments or anything along those lines, we would love to get it. If you want to drop us an email, that's McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com. And then we all of us have different Twitter accounts. So first off, Rose, what's yours?
We've got 80s Music Girl at Twitter. And my music page, Dragons Rose Red, at Twitter.
Okay. And Suzanne, you've got your own Twitter account, but you also have a webpage with your kick-ass blog on it. So tell everybody about that.
Thank you. Yeah. Suzanne at matabony.com, SuzanneMattaboni. We all get to keep getting spelling it. Yeah. But that's going to become my brand, I think, spelling out the name. But Twitter is Suze Mattaboni, and I think Suzanne Mattaboni 80s on Instagram. So,
and if it's easier to remember, it's straight out of Mattaboni. all right, so
I don't know. Nobody but us gets that joke anymore.
Well, we went with the straight out of Compton part, so I'm going to just abuse that joke over and over again. So, Scott, you've got your own Twitter account.
Yeah. Yes, I do. It's at 80s Auto Reverse.
Very cool.
That's it.
All right, everybody. We appreciate you listening. Please, please, please be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
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 This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 So what do you do with these women? You just get up out of bed and leave?
Sure.
Well, explain to me how you do it. What do you say?
Just have an early meeting, early haircut, early squash game.
You don't play squash.
They don't know that. They just met me.
That's disgusting.
I know. I feel terrible.
You know, I'm so glad I never got involved with you. I just would have ended up being some woman you had to get up out of bed and leave at 3 o'clock in the morning and go clean your andirons. And you don't even have a fireplace. Not that I would know this.
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
Hey, I don't feel great about this, but I don't hear anyone complaining.
Of course not. You're out the door too fast.
I think they have an okay time.
How do you know?
I mean, how do I know? I know.
Because they...
Yes, because they...
How do you know that they're really...
What are you saying? That they fake orgasm?
It's possible.
Get out of here.
Why? Most women at one time or another have faked it.
Well, they haven't faked it with me.
How do you know?
Because I know.
Oh. Right. That's right. I forgot. You're a man.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just that all men are sure it never happened to them, and most women at one time or another have done it, so you do the math.
You don't think that I could tell a difference?
No.
Get out of here.
Ooh. Oh. Ooh.
Are you okay?
Oh. Oh, God. Ooh. Oh, God. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh, yeah, right there. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh. Yes. 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 Oh. Oh, yes. 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 Oh. Yes. 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 Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh.
I'll have what she's having.